Thank you and good afternoon. Yesterday, I had the privilege to go on the Winter Wheat Tour, sponsored by the Illinois Wheat Association. The tour started in four locations: Seymour Milling Company in Totopolis, Agromax Wheat Seed Company in Mascosh, Wabash Valley Service Company in Carmi, and Mennell Milling Company in Mount Olive, where I myself departed from. We traveled the fields in the Mount Olive area and used 3-foot rulers and tubes to calculate potential yields. By counting the number of wheat heads in the 3-foot area, a prediction of yield can be made. Observations were taken of the wheat to assess for pest and disease in the fields. I talked with John Ernst, president of the Illinois Wheat Association, about the tour and the wheat crop this year. I'm here with John Ernst today, president of the Illinois Wheat Association, at the Illinois Wheat Association Winter Wheat Tour. What's the goal of the tour today?
Well, the goal of the tour today is to get kind of a handle on this year's wheat crops perspective. You know, what kind of an average yield we can expect and how it compares to past years.
How does the wheat crop compare this year to last year from what you've seen today?
Well, the last 2 years have been record yields. Before I even left home, I figured it'd be hard to match that. We've just been in three fields today, and the first two fields were fairly average, probably a slightly less than what we saw last year. This field we just walked in is by far the best wheat I've seen this year. It's got good long head size, 18 to 20 spikelets per head, above average tiller counts. It really looks like good wheat. So it'll be interesting what we see the rest of the day.
Have you seen any evidence of disease or pests in any of the fields today?
Well, we've seen a little bit of head scab, more than we've seen in the past couple of years. Nothing serious. We've seen a little bit of septoria on the leaves, but again, I don't think that will be a very much of a yield robber. So overall, the plant looks very healthy. Scab really isn't a huge issue this year so far.
That's really good. How are the above average temperatures this early in the season? How will that affect the wheat crop this year?
Well, we had above average temperatures for May, but April was very, very cold. So if you, on the 1st of May, I would have said that the wheat was, every bit of 3 weeks behind last year. With the very, very warm May, I think we've sped it up. So I'd cut that time in half. I'd say we're 10 days behind last year. So I would say, there'd be a lot of wheat combined in that last week of June.
Are there any Illinois Wheat Association events coming up in the next few months?
Yeah, in August we have our annual Summer Wheat Forum. I believe it's going to be in Oakville this year at a different facility than it has been in the past. We've always got real good speakers for our summer forum, and we try and wrap up variety trials to just compare and find the best yielding wheat varieties for Illinois.
I know I've really enjoyed the tour today. I don't really know a ton about wheat, so this has been really helpful for me. If anybody has any further questions or interest in the Illinois Wheat Association, where can they find that information?
The IWA has its own website. I believe it's iwa.org, or just search for Illinois Wheat Association. We're always interested in new members, and we really try and bring value to our members through our programs. It's not expensive to join. If you take a 3-year membership, there's a seed credit that basically pays for your 3 years. So it's like getting a membership for free and getting high quality seed to go with it. So we always encourage people from Illinois to give wheat a try, and I really think that it's a profitable crop in every rotation here in Southern Illinois.
Well, thank you, John. I enjoyed my trip on the tour today with you guys. We hope to talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Jamie.
I thoroughly enjoyed my time on the Winter Wheat Tour and would highly recommend anyone with an interest in wheat to look into the Illinois Wheat Association. The USDA says we can't afford trade disruptions. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue says trade is too important for the U.S. and its trading partners to be disrupted. Purdue spoke Thursday at the 22nd World Meat Congress in Dallas, Texas, hosted by the U.S. Meat Export Federation and the International Meat Secretariat. On the same day, the U.S. announced it will end exemptions of steel and aluminum tariffs for Mexico and Canada, along with the European Union. Purdue says the U.S., Canada, and Mexico have too much in common to allow a trade disruption.
I think while things are not able to be announced right now, I've just visited with Minister McCauley, and we both acknowledge, frankly, when you look at North America, I like to say we live in the best neighborhood on the planet, and we've got too much in common to allow trade disruptions to divide us. And I'm hopeful that we can get back to the business of talking about how we can resolve this issue and do right and feed everyone. NAFTA has been generally good for agriculture in most aspects. There are a few maybe that have not fared as well. But we need to make sure that we have equivalency in food safety, sanitary, phytosanitary issues, and then let our producers compete. I'm all in favor of reciprocal trade type agreements. Certainly, we want to open our borders for products, but we want those other borders to be opened as well. We have a great consuming nation here. China and Mexico have taken good advantage of that, but we also have exports that we need to send to Canada as well as Mexico.
Purdue says he is hopeful an agreement on a new NAFTA can be reached this year, but concedes there are hurdles ahead, being elections in Mexico in July and the fall U.S. midterm elections. Meanwhile, regarding China, another top destination of U.S. agriculture exports with a high demand for U.S. meats, Purdue says the administration is working to remove trade barriers as part of the talks with China.
It's a little bit of a roller coaster with China, certainly. We felt good enough about to send a team with our Undersecretary for Trade, Ted McKinney, as well as our technical people, our career trade people, our food safety people, our APHIS people of food equivalency. There are a lot of non-tariff barriers that have existed between the U.S. and China. We're trying to erode those and get it where we can do free trade and fair trade. We don't have a problem with complying with another nation's standards if they're international standards. We don't want artificial standards based on protectionism to keep us out of the market. So we're hopeful we can get that done. There really is a lot of need in China, a lot of hungry mouths there, as you know. And we think there's probably another $8 to $10 to $12 billion of ag exports that can go into China very easily.
The current trade climate is causing anxiety for U.S. farmers. Purdue says he understands.
It's an anxious time. It's a legitimate anxiety, obviously placed in the situation of low commodity prices already. We can't afford trade disruptions. We've got to keep the markets going, and we hope to get this resolved as soon as possible because, you know, farmers are planning now. They're having to make cropping decisions, not just for 18, but even thinking with the farm bill into 19 and beyond. That's why we need a farm bill as well this year before expiration, so farmers can make those capital investments and other things that they need to do to keep their operations going.
Learn more about the importance of global trade online at www.usmef.org. The Farm Show will be back after these messages. Natural disasters can destroy a farm or ranch's entire profit in just a few short minutes. The USDA has reopened the application period for producers recovering from cattle loss and other disasters. Sign-up begins June 4th for Livestock Indemnity Program and Emergency Assistance for Livestock, Honeybees, and Farm-Raised Fish. The U.S. Department of Agriculture will begin accepting Disaster Assistance Program applications on June 4th from agricultural producers who suffered livestock, honeybees, farm-raised fish, and other losses due to natural disasters. USDA's Farm Service Agency, or FSA, is reopening the application period for two disaster assistance programs in response to statutory changes made by Congress earlier this year. When disasters hit, help is as close as your USDA service center, said Bill Northey, Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation. After any catastrophic event, an eligible producer can walk into any one of our local offices and apply for help. Beginning June 4th, FSA will accept new applications for losses for calendar year 2017 or 2018 filed under the Livestock Indemnity Program, or LIP, or Emergency Assistance for Livestock, Honeybees, and Farm-Raised Fish Program, also known as ELAP. Producers who already submitted applications and received decisions on their applications for these years do not need to file again. But they can reapply if they have additional losses or their application was disapproved because it was filed late. In February, Congress passed the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2018, which made several changes to these two disaster programs, including removing ELAP's $20 billion fiscal year funding cap, enabling FSA to pay producers 2017 applications in full and their 2018 applications as soon as they are approved, removing the per-person and legal entity annual program payment limitation of $125,000 for LIP for 2017 and future years, changing LIP to allow producers to receive a payment for injured livestock that are sold for a reduced price due to an eligible event. Previously, the program only covered financial loss for livestock death above normal mortality. Producers interested in LIP or ELAP should contact their local USDA service center. To apply, producers will need to provide verifiable and reliable production records and other information about their operation. Drought, wildfires, and other disasters continue to impact farmers and ranchers, and LIP and ELAP are two of many programs available through USDA to help producers recover. The USDA is partnering with Texas A&M to help veterans seeking agricultural loans and careers. U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue today announced a partnership between the U.S. Department of Agriculture and Texas A&M's AgriLife Extension Service to help military veterans obtain loans and pursue careers as farmers and ranchers. Secretary Perdue joined local dignitaries, members of the armed forces, veterans, and community leaders at the Dallas Farmers Market to unveil the new pilot program. USDA's Farm Service Agency, or FSA, is collaborating with AgriLife Extension Service on the pilot, which is part of the Texas A&M Battleground to Breaking Ground project. The program makes it easier for veterans to meet federal requirements to get FSA direct farm ownership loans, which can help provide access to land and capital. Veterans retiring from active duty face many challenges, and this effort provides them with hands-on training and financial planning to help them succeed as new farmers and ranchers, said Secretary Perdue, who is a veteran of the U.S. Air Force. Through this pilot, veterans will learn how to build an agricultural business and how USDA can help them at every step of the way. We are committed to supporting veterans, whether they are starting or growing their farming or ranching operations. This is an important step in our efforts to strengthen the American economy and support our American heroes. The pilot program, which will include 15 to 18 veterans, will roll out in three phases: an introductory workshop, a business planning curriculum, and a production curriculum over a period of 12 to 18 months. Typically, loan applicants must participate in the business operations of a farm for at least 3 years during a 10-year period. However, as part of this pilot program, participants can combine the certificate they receive with their military leadership or management experience to satisfy this requirement. According to the U.S. Department of Labor, approximately 45% of armed service members are from rural America. Pilot program applications will be accepted from interested veterans between June 15th and July 20th, 2018, until 11 p.m. Central Standard Time. For more information about USDA programs, visit newfarmers.usda.gov/veterans or www.farmers.gov. Today is the first day of National Dairy Month, and a Washington dairy farmer is turning to technology to increase efficiency and reduce costs. The agricultural industry is always looking for ways to be more efficient and save money. That's where 21st century technology meets the oldest profession on earth. Dairy is one of the industries where individual farmers are looking at robots and artificial intelligence to improve their operation. Dairy farmer Leeway Plagerman recently installed 8 robots on his farm in western Washington. Plagerman says while saving on labor costs was one of the most attractive parts of installing the robots, he says there's more.
And then secondly, all the data information that we can get on our cows and the management abilities that we have as a result of having the robotics doing our milking for us now.
Plagerman says after having the robots for months, there's no doubt the machines work and they do their job efficiently. But the question producers must ask themselves is, will installing the robots pencil out in the long run? Plagerman says in his experience, the robots currently work best for medium-sized operations with roughly 500 cows.
When you have a large, efficient parlor and you put a lot of cows through there, it's a little bit harder to justify doing the robots. They figure labor needs to be almost $36.50 per hour before it starts penciling in, and we're not there yet.
That was Washington State dairy farmer Leeway Plagerman. Starting tomorrow, the Saturday afternoon farm show will be dedicated to equine, Join me tomorrow to learn about horses and horse-related events in the area. Have a great weekend. Reporting for WSMI, this has been Jamie Geisler.